Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Music by Franz Schubert from his four impromptus, Opus 90, Deutsch 899. We heard number 2 in E-flat major, performed by our guest today, pianist Simone Dinnerstein. We're very, very proud to have a wonderful artist with us today on Crossover. Her name is Simone Dinnerstein. Welcome to Crossover.
Thank you for having me on the show.
You are a tremendous hit. I don't know if you expected it to happen, but you certainly have taken the music world by storm in a very peaceful way. The albums that you have released have been extremely successful. The Bach album that you did initially, the Goldberg Variations, was spectacular. I read somewhere that you had to raise the funds to record that.
Yes, yeah, I recorded that back in 2005, and I asked a few friends if they would fund the recording, and they did. And so I kind of went about it a sort of backwards way in that I raised the money, I recorded with a fantastic producer, Adam Apeshaus, and then once I had the master tape, then sort of sent it to different labels. And in 2007, Telarc commercially released that recording that I'd made.
Yeah, musical history, I think we'd categorize it. The Goldberg Variations, very profound. Is it a work that one would say is interpreted differently by different people? How would you categorize the Goldberg Variations? What was Bach trying to do with his music at that point?
Well, it's an enormous piece of music. It's probably one of the longest keyboard pieces we have. Being variations, there are many, many different kinds of compositional techniques used, of different kinds of expressivity, different kinds of mood. And there aren't a lot of instructions about how to play it. And there are lots of differing opinions about what might have been historically accurate way of interpreting Bach's music, and then whether or not that's even relevant to be thinking about in the 2000s. So what happens with Bach's music is that people interpret it in many, many, many different ways, and it seems to open itself up to more interpretation than really any other composer.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bach's music has entered into the jazz world, into the pop world. I mean, so many people have been interested and excited by his music. There's something very abstract about it that seems to reflect back whatever you happen to give to it, you know? And in the Goldberg Variations, it being that big, that sort of huge kind of journey, it kind of especially emphasizes the differences between people's interpretations.
Thank you. Simona Dinnerstein, pianist with the aria and several variations from the larger work, the Goldberg Variations by Johann Sebastian Bach. Ms. Dinnerstein's album in 2007 was phenomenally successful, showered with all kinds of accolades. Is it connected? I mean, each variation, you know, I mean, is there some plan, do you think, that he had in mind? I mean, we overanalyze Bach, but I'm sure he didn't just kind of sit down and say, I think I'll write something like this, and it's a grand opus. Is there some intellectual connection rather than musical?
Well, there's definitely an architecture to it, which is both intellectual and musical. I think he would never have separated those two from each other. I think he thought in music. But it's 30 variations, and they're evenly divided into two books, you know, up to variation 15, and then from variation 16 to 30, there's an aria that starts. That aria is repeated at the end. It's divided into groups of three variations, where the third variation is always a canon. The canons are always increasing in their the distance between the two voices, the intervals. I mean, there's a lot of different structures that are going on that were very carefully thought out.
Do you discover them as you're playing them? I mean, was it a discovery, a journey of discovery for you, musically?
Oh, yes. I mean, you really have to. You have to look very deeply into Bach's music and try to understand, you know, the skeleton of what's taking place. And then every decision that you make as an interpreter affects the whole. So every small decision relates to a large decision. So what you decide to do in the beginning of the piece is going to affect how the end of the piece sounds. And with something that long, it's kind of like wielding this enormous piece of dough,
exactly,
you know, which might fall over at one side, you know.
But I'm sure that it did something for you intellectually and musically as well, because it was a tremendous success. And what I find in this new album, The Something Almost Being Said, is that same profound... I'm trying to think of the word, the Schubert especially. I mean, your melodic line and the way you produce that sound is really breathtaking. I mean, these are well known, these four impromptus, but I must say your performance is just gorgeous. I really was very, very moved by it.
Thank you.
It's also the quality of sound, the texture, you know, the way you play, actually. But there was that same feeling that I got in listening to this album of the way you interpret the music, and it's so much a part of you. I mean, you really, it's what you feel well beyond the written note, and that's really wonderful to transmit that to an audience.
Thank you. Well, I mean, this music is very, very personal. I think it's written in a way that's very intimate and personal.
It's also the poem that it is, I guess you're referring to. This was written by someone by the name of Philip Larkin. Did you find this poem?
Yes. Well, actually, my husband recommended it. And my husband is English, and Philip Larkin is a very well-known English poet. He's very, very popular in England, but not as well-known here in the U.S. So when I was looking for a title and I was talking to my husband about it, and I was saying, you know, this music feels like it's saying something that couldn't be said in words, it feels like it's about to break into speech or about to break into song,
but
it's saying something
there.
Very particular,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm.
So he told me about the poem The Trees by Philip Larkin, which begins with the lines, "The trees are coming into leaf like something almost being said."
Right.
And I just thought, well, that's perfect.
It's perfect. Well, it's very profound, the poem, and it's depressing as well, because nature is that way. I mean, you know, there is the bud, the flowering, and then the dying. And, of course,
yeah.
That's what he talks about in the poem, which is exquisite. But I find that all of your, you know, certainly the albums that you've released are very, there is that sense of profundity in there. It's very personal as well. The Trees by Philip Larkin. The trees are coming into leaf like something almost being said. The recent buds relax and spread. Their greenness is a kind of grief. Is it that they are born again and we grow old? No, they die too. Their yearly trick of looking new is written down in rings of grain. Yet still the unresting castles thresh in full-grown thickness every May. Last year is dead, they seem to say. Begin afresh, afresh, afresh. From Four Impromptus, Opus 90, Deutschlisting 899 by Franz Schubert, we heard number 1 in C minor, performed by Simona Dinnerstein, pianist. From her album, Something Almost Being Said, music of Bach and Schubert. You're also, I kind of don't know if you are really an altruist, but from what I've read, you want to share music with and perform in unlikely venues. You are active with the New York City Public Schools in terms of your concert series that you present, and you've played in prisons and I don't want to sound naive about this, but you're bringing the music to people who may not necessarily ever hear that. And has that affected you in any way when you do those performances?
Oh, yes. I mean, I used to, before the Goldberg Variations, I did lots of concerts for an organization called the Piatigorsky Foundation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And their mission is to send musicians into communities that might not normally have a classical music concert. And that was a huge experience for me doing those concerts. And so I always want to be playing concerts that are connecting with people in a direct way that might not have this music. I mean, I think that the most striking concert I feel I've ever done was the one that I did in Maryland for the Women's State Correctional Facility. And that was just, I know that they definitely were very emotionally, they had a really emotional response to the music that was amazing, the women. But also for me, it was a breaking down of preconceptions that I had about what it would be like to go into a place like that and what these women would be like. And I felt like I was able to communicate with them in a special way by playing music.
What did you play? What, for instance, on the program?
I actually remember I played, I think I played some of those Schubert impromptus that are on my new CD, and I played a Bach French suite. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what else I played. It might have just been, it was a kind of short concert, but it was just an amazing concert. I felt like it was everything that music should be about, mm-hmm. that being a musician should be about.
It's a language, of course.
Yeah.
And but you still are active with this kind of thing where you're disseminating music through various venues that perhaps can't afford to have concerts, or and also for children as well.
I have a concert series at two public schools in New York City that's called Neighborhood Classics. And I don't just play the concerts. I present friends of mine, colleagues of mine. They come. Everybody donates their performances. And they're evening concerts. So they're also fundraisers for the school. I mean, we charge like a low ticket price, but mm-hmm. they raise money for the PTA. But that is connected to my idea that I think that it's really important for musicians to give back and also to connect with their community. I feel very connected with my own community of Park Slope in Brooklyn. And so having a concert series where people know me and they trust that I'm going to bring in people that are going to be exciting for them to hear, it's just really special. And I think that it makes a big difference to the audience to know their musician. You know?
Yeah, and I think Park Slope is that kind of a community. I mean, it's they're intellectually on a certain level, and I guess they're I suppose it's, you know, New York and Brooklyn and so on, there are areas there where people are, I don't want to use the word sophisticated, but they think of things on a different level in terms of sharing intellectually. I think that's something that you find. It isn't always money. It's other things that are important.
Yes, being interested.
Yeah, being interested in giving and sharing beauty. Where did you study, Simona?
Well, when I was a kid growing up, I studied on Saturdays at the Manhattan School of Music, okay. pre-college, mm-hmm. with Solomon Mikofsky.
Yes.
And then I went to Juilliard for college, and I studied with Peter Serkin there. And sort of in between, I studied in London with Maria Curcio.
There is something about you, I think, that goes so... Well, you're a musician and you share with the audience, but there's a very profound, and you have a bond that's very emotional from certainly the music that I've heard you play. I feel that as well. And if that's what you're trying to do, you've certainly achieved it, I must say.
Oh, thank you.
What is it? Any new projects in mind?
Well, my next recording is going to be quite different, actually. I'm going to be recording with the singer-songwriter Tift Merritt. And we're doing a program that we actually performed, we developed last season, called Night. And it's all songs having to do with the night. And we commissioned some composers to write for us, and we're doing some covers of songs, and we're doing some classical lieder. And it's just a really exciting project. I'm really thrilled to be recording it.
And you have, are you concertizing? Do you have anything scheduled going out of this country?
Yes, actually, I'm leaving. Next week, I'm going to play in Scotland with the Royal Scottish National Orchestra. And I have some concerts this season in Vienna and Istanbul and Denmark. And
well, are they solo concerts, or are you going to do concertos or something?
Well, most of the European ones this year are concertos, though Istanbul is going to be a recital.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of going back and forth.
Yeah, you have a lot to not to learn, but to give to the public, because I think they think of you in a certain vein. Very precious, very, very precious. You're playing. And really a joy. I'm so happy to have had this opportunity, not only to speak with you, but to really share this new album. It's just glorious.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the best.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our guest today has been Simona Dinnerstein. And from her latest album, Something Almost Being Said, we hear from the Partita No. 1 in B-flat major by Johann Sebastian Bach, the Saraband, Minuets 1 and 2, and the Gigue. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time. Thank you.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Patti, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group, Incorporated. Thanks for listening.